Hi, this is Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. This is part three of our three-part interview series with email copywriting legend Ben Settle. The title of part three is called How to Build a Following. When it comes to marketing, most people think a long list of what matters most, but Ben says it's actually more effective to concentrate on building a following instead. If you make yourself available on many different platforms like ebooks, Facebook, podcasts, talk radio, YouTube, blogs, Twitter, your name will just start popping up all over the place for people. You'll make a name for yourself, you'll drive more traffic to your website, and you'll actually end up with more than one list. And the beauty of this approach is someone who's listening to a half-hour interview with you on a podcast, then clicks over to your website, is a very qualified lead. So in part three of our Ben Settle interview series, you'll hear how to build the kind of following that includes multiple lists and audiences so you can create targeted and qualified leads, along with the other techniques that work to make the most out of your email marketing. You'll also hear three almost sneaky shortcuts for becoming an expert on a topic fast. Get to know your audience's frustration, fears, goals, and passions, even if you don't know a thing about the subject. You'll also learn the fastest known way to pull the best subject lines or headlines straight off a forum and know with certainty you're resonating with your target audience. You'll hear about the only internet site you need to go to if you'd like to be a guest on a podcast or radio show, and you won't be imposing on these shows. They're looking for good content. You'll learn about a 3-minute exercise that will force your brain to produce better, clearer, and more concise email copy. You'll also hear everything you want to know about email marketing, from how to recycle emails to gauging the temperature of your list to the best times to send out promotions so you stick out in the inboxes. You'll hear why Ben doesn't trust anyone who says that they test their emails and know they get results, and the only real way to measure your email marketing results. You'll also learn the vital importance of segmenting your email content so you're not trying to fit 6 different topics into one mailing. You'll also learn a little known fact: curiosity gets the click. People buy because they're curious about something more than self-interest or even more than price. Here's how to make sure your emails have this important element from the subject line to the offer. Look, the thing with email marketing is you never know where your list is going to be on any given day, financially, physically, emotionally. So what gets clicked on today may not get clicked on tomorrow and vice versa. That's why Ben says the key to doubling sales is to get yourself out there in as many different ways as possible and as often as you can. And in this audio interview, you'll hear all about it. Now let's get going. All right, that's good. So this may segue into this question. It's from DJ Hart. She wants to know, how does Ben research a topic he has no previous knowledge of, just like you expressed in this story, in order to prepare and, say, write a 750-word email? So why don't you use that example? Where did you go to do the research to come up with the email for this specific topic that you knew nothing about? And could one copycat that technique for developing content for something they don't know about that they want to sell?
Generally stick with markets that I am in. So like the golf market, I'm not an avid golfer, but I'm enough of a golfer where I know the frustrations and pains and I can easily get the answers I need from other golfers. For example, when I sold in the weight loss niche, you know, I'm not an overweight female. I can't just instantly connect and say, oh, I understand that market. I had to go through and talk to overweight women, but one of the shortcuts I would do is I would go on Google, and I would be like a fly on the wall in their chat rooms. And understand this, on the internet, people think they have anonymity. They do to a certain extent, but they feel free to say whatever they want, especially if they're not giving the real name. So whatever market you're in, you can do the same thing. Go to chat rooms and forums and blog comments, and they will tell you stories that you can use in your emails. In fact, forums are perfect for that, because a lot of forum software, you can sort forum threads by the number of views so that the highest viewed ones are at the top. You can just sort it. So like maybe one topic got 1 million views while the other ones only have like 3,000 or 4,000. There's something about that forum thread that's resonating, and probably they've given you a subject line or the makings of a subject line in the title of that thread. So that's one good way. Another way you do it is get on direct mail list if applicable. Not everything lends itself to this, but I know in the prostate niche, I would do this. I would get on a bunch of lists for prostate supplements, and these copywriters are doing all my work for me. They did all the research for me, all the scientific studies. They researched it for me and put it in their ads. I'm not saying I would copy and paste what they were saying, but they were giving me information I could then put into emails. By the way, 750-word email is pretty long. Chances are if your email's that long, and this isn't going to be every case, but in a lot of cases, a lot of people write long emails that are really two or three emails that they could break up into 200, 300-word emails. Just something to think about.
All right, so how long should an email be?
Well, like I was saying before, it's just long enough. Like a woman's skirt, short enough to get attention, long enough to cover the details. It depends. I strive to keep mine under 300 words, but I rarely ever do. But I think that's a good starting point. Do a word count on your next email and try to remove 50 words from it. Make this an exercise. And you will start forcing your brain to think of ways to condense ideas into smaller chunks and then to make things more clear. You might find that you're actually talking about two things. Well, if you're talking about two different topics in the same email, just separate that into two different emails so that you don't overwhelm people. Think of email as a talk radio segment. So if you ever listen to talk radio, it's segmented. The first 15 minutes is the monologue. Then they take calls. But each segment is like a topic in and of itself. They don't go into five different topics. It's this segment, we're going to talk about XYZ. Then they go to commercial. And that's how email should be too.
What other consistent marketing have you been doing that has helped you build a good following? You've got your podcast, you've got a little bit of Facebook, you're getting into some paid AdWords, anything else?
Yeah, I would say probably the best, I mean, of all of them. And it's hard to track this, but you just get a feel for it. I suppose it could be tracked, but it would take too much work that I want to do. But I can just see it working because people say, oh, I heard about you from XYZ. And that is start doing podcast interviews where you make yourself available to be interviewed on other people's podcasts. Most podcasts out there that I've heard, at least, and I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but very few of them are just one guy talking. Most of them are interview-based. That's how they do it. For whatever reason, financial reasons, whatever, maybe they can monetize it better. They like to do interview-based podcasts, so they always interview someone new. Understand that someone who listens to a half-hour-long podcast or an hour-long podcast all the way to the end and then goes to your site is a very qualified lead. You may not get a lot of traffic like that, but the traffic you do get tends to be very, very high-quality customers, high-quality people, people who are just into whatever it is you're selling, the topic. And so I would say make yourself available to do those things. There's a site called RadioGuestList.com where podcasters and real radio shows, and I've gotten on real radio shows doing this, they will say, we're looking for an expert about XYZ to interview on our show. And they're basically saying, send me an email and pitch me on why I should interview you. I've used that pretty successfully. Just find podcasts and just look at them. A lot of them are looking for good content. I mean, they need it. You're not imposing on these people at all. They need you. So if you got something good to share, start doing that. In fact, for our podcast, my producer, Jonathan Rivera, hired this lady to go out and find people to interview me. So she's always researching other podcasts and getting me booked. It's like her job. And I have been doing a lot of that over the last several months, and it pays off. Because people do say, I heard about you from XYZ show, or I keep hearing your name pop up. I think they say that because they're listening to all the same podcasts, and certain names do pop up over and over. They're very powerful. Again, I don't know how you would track it unless you created a unique URL for every show that you're going to plug that URL in a different show. But you'll see your traffic go up and your sales go up.
For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com. All right, how about joint ventures? When I first met you, you were married. You're pretty tied down. You're pretty much solo Ben. Over the recent years, you've gotten out there and you've done a lot of networking. You're speaking at seminars and you're connecting more with the internet marketing community. So are you doing JVs out there with these new connections, and are joint ventures a source for new subscribers as well?
They certainly can be. There's a lot of people who owe me a solid because I'll promote certain people, not because, oh, I want a favor from them or anything. It's just because they're selling something that I think my list would want. So I don't do a lot of the, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. My joint venture, it's usually me selling someone else's stuff. And that's very rare. I can count the number of people on one hand whose stuff I'm going to take the time to try to sell. And I think it's good to be choosy like that. But that is a good way to do it. You absolutely could. I remember you and I did a joint venture once where I was like, hey, Michael, how about I write you 10 press releases or something, and then you plug my site to your list, and your list was like 14,000 people at the time. Mine was only like 4,000. And that was a very big success. And I always tell people, make deals like that with people if you can.
What was the seminar that you promote in Las Vegas? It was a real small, like, mastermind group. Is that a JV situation?
It's called Oceans 4. It's four of us. It's me, Jack Bourne, Ryan Levesque, and Andre Chaperone, where people like 6, 7, 8, even the 9-figure business, Agora's come to almost all of them except one, where they come in, we put them on a hot seat, and we tear apart their funnel, we tear apart their strategy, we tear apart their offers, we tear apart their emails and their copy. The four of us each bring different strengths to the table. I'm not the funnel guy. That's Ryan Levesque's thing, and he can just tear a funnel apart by looking at it. I'll go through all their emails, and I'll sit there and one by one say, do this, do this, do this, and Andre does the same thing, and Jack Bourne's like a programmer, and he's also Perry Marshall's affiliate manager, and he just knows all this stuff about the mechanics of a website and the mechanics of an offer and what's working and what's not working. So we all just bring different things to the table. And it's a joint venture in the sense that we all combine forces. So, yeah, I guess you would say it's a joint venture.
Y'all split the money?
Yeah, we split the money, and it's not that we make very much. When all is said and done, I'm not even sure it's worth taking a weekend to do it. But what's worth it is there's so many ideas flying around the room that the four of us get as much out of it as the attendees. So we make a little bit of money on it, but that's not even the goal of it. If we were trying to make money, we would double the price. It's actually relatively inexpensive to go. And we have four or five people who just come every year, every time we do one, and then we get some new people come and go. And it's been more successful than we thought. It really was only supposed to be a one-time thing. We may not even do another one. It just depends. All of our schedules are getting crazier. If we do, it'll probably be once a year from now on, but we've done like six of them, I think. It's been very successful.
Then can a skilled email marketer expect better response if sending multiple emails per day?
I'll just put it this way. Everyone's results may vary, but if I was more motivated than I am now and I wanted to put the time into it and the thought power into it, I would be sending at least two a day, if not three. I think as long as they're good and they're interesting, you're okay. Now, if they're boring emails and it's just blatant pitching one after another all day, it probably isn't going to do too much good for you. But if you are interesting and you have something to say, I know people who do three a day. Dagan Smith, for example, I know he does like three a day sometimes. And he's like, it's just like the more he sends, the more money he makes. It's not unlike when we do our offers leading up to deadlines. But again, you have to kind of take the temperature of your list. Maybe your list really is going to get pissed at you if you send three a day. It's kind of hard to answer that as a blanket thing. But personally, I would be sending two a day. And I do sometimes if I was more motivated, because I know it would make me more money.
All right, Bill Mueller from San Diego here, he's a fellow copywriter, he wants to know, do you survey your list?
I don't remember the last time I surveyed the list. If you're going to survey a list, do it in a way that's very meticulous, kind of like how Ryan Levesque does that sort of thing. If I did survey my list, I would ask one question only. I would ask, what were the last two or three products you bought about whatever you're selling? What are the last two or three products you've bought, and what are the URLs? Because they're telling you what they're actually spending money on, other than just what they think you want to hear or guessing. Or people will say one thing, but they don't mean it. If you ask people what's better, reading a novel or watching a movie, well, I read the novel. You know, most of them never read a novel in their life. They just want to sound sophisticated, right? And what's your favorite book? My favorite book's the Bible. I can tell you, most people who say that have never even read their Bible, so they're just getting a feel-good answer. Or sometimes people just don't know what they want. And so they think they want one thing, but you're noticing they're spending money on something else. It goes back to what are they buying, not what they say they want to buy, but what are they buying. You might find that they bought the same kind of product the last three times they bought, three different versions of the same type of product. And what would be the best thing to sell them is that same kind of product, only better.
For the guests who are just now joining us, can you give out your URL website and tell them what to do when they get there?
Yeah, it's bensettle.com, and if you go there, you can either opt in or not opt in. It's up to you. If you do opt in, I will send you the first issue of my email players newsletter. It'll be a PDF, not the print version of the first issue. That's a very real $97 value. That's what it costs every month to be a member. No one ever gets a price break or anything like that. It's $97 a month. That's what that issue is legitimately worth. And it's got 24 different ways to make more money with your emails. I just went through like 24 things you can do, different openings and subject lines and approaches and ideas. And people absolutely make money on that just going through that free issue, because that's the goal. I want them to get a taste of what I have to offer them. And what better way than show them how to actually make some more sales? So that's free. And if you don't opt in, that's fine too. You can go to the blog where I got well over 1,000 pages worth of content on there and a bunch of audio and video. It's all free, so it's yours for the taking. You can download it, listen to it, whatever you want to do. Unsettled.com.
All right, when it comes to subject lines, if you had to choose one subject line template idea for someone who wants to ramp up their response in email, could you share maybe just one of your favorites, even though they're going to get it when they log into your site?
This probably isn't even in that free issue, but when in doubt, go for maximum curiosity. Curiosity gets the click. I mean, curiosity is actually more persuasive in selling than self-interest. In fact, here's a story I learned from Scott Haines. Scott Haines was one of Gary Halbert's only true proteges. Gary only had a handful, from what I understand, and he was one of them. I've actually met Scott Haines, and I've sold his copywriting course. He's a really good guy, very, very high-level copywriter. And I remember when I interviewed him once many years ago for my site, he told the story about how Gary Halbert would take him out on a boat all day. You know, right before the deadline, they're still cruising around on a boat because that's how he would get ideas. And apparently one day he asked Scott, "So, Scott, what do you think the most important part of advertising is, the sales letter?" And Scott said, "Well, that's easy, self-interest." And Gary Halbert's like, "No, you're wrong. It's curiosity. People will buy because you made them curious, like on page 8 of an ad in a bullet point." And it's a very, very powerful thing. People will buy very expensive products they didn't even know existed 5 minutes earlier because of some kind of curiosity thing in a sales pitch. So it even double applies to email. If you want to stick out in that inbox, you go for maximum curiosity. That's not the only way to do it. I teach dozens of ways to do this, but that's the go-to way.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. Here's a question from Dr. Lance Zimney, D.C., Life in Motion Chiropractic and Wellness at www.lifetothefull.com. Ben, as a doctor of chiropractic, is it better to write the bulk of my emails on more controversial issues in healthcare or stay relatively even keel and throw in more bold controversial subjects few and far between? Note, I've purchased some of Ben's products in the past and I know he can get quite controversial. I'm trying to gain the thick skin that Ben has. Smiley face.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think you should give your opinion. And if your opinion happens to be controversial, so be it. I don't necessarily think you have to go out of your way to invent something. Although that's not a bad idea either, just to stay controversial. But two people come to mind in the health niche. One is Dr. Mercola. Mercola.com is probably the biggest independent natural health advice and product site on the Internet, certainly one of the biggest. That guy never says anything that's in the mainstream. You almost get kind of angry at him because he'll make you think you're going to die if you use anyone else's product but his. And he's very good at that. Is he trying to be controversial? Is he up there ranting and raving? No. He's actually very even voice and even keeled and very methodical and logical and all that. But it's just inherently controversial because he just doesn't agree with any of the mainstream. There's this other guy, Dr. William Campbell Douglas. He's got a print newsletter. It's like $39 a year. And I highly recommend getting on that too because he goes out of his way to be controversial. This guy will pick anything that the mainstream says and in an infotaining way, I might add. He will skewer it, and it's so fun reading his stuff. So, yeah, I would recommend it. It doesn't mean you have to be obnoxious about it. You can just have a counter opinion. You know, chiropractors have a lot of uphill battles as it is. I mean, you have a lot of competition from each other, and then you have the mainstream always downing you and saying you're frauds and quacks and all that. So if people are going to paint you as a villain, this is my way of looking at things, Michael. I'm not saying everyone needs to adopt this, but this is how I look at it. If someone's going to cast me as a villain, I'm going to play the part well. I'm just going to run with it. So I think you should. And do you need a thick skin? Yeah, you'll get it. Over time, it's kind of like the Thai boxers over in Thailand, right? Thai boxing is a very interesting sport. The movie Kickboxer actually kind of went into this a little bit. They Hollywoodized it a little bit. But they will sit there and kick a banana tree until their shin breaks. And then they'll let it heal, and then they'll kick that tree again until it breaks again. And they'll keep doing that because every time they kick that tree and break their shin, what happens is, I think they call it calcification or it's calcifying or whatever. The good chiropractor probably would know more about this than I do, actually, but basically what I understand it, the little cracks in the bones and all that start to harden so that your shins become like rock hard eventually. And it's the same thing when you're dealing with the Internet and all the trolls and haters out there. At first, yeah, it's a little hair-raising, but then you start to realize, and this one guy who was on Twitter, I can never pronounce his last name, it's Mike Cyrilovich or something like that. I probably just butchered his name, but he said something very interesting. He's like, you know, the whole Internet, it's basically just pro wrestling. It really is. All the controversy you see on the Internet, It's like pro wrestling. And once you realize that, that's the mentality of what's going on out there, that it's not worth even getting upset about. It's not worth letting it keep you awake at night. People who are attacking you tend to be losers with no lives of their own, and they're attacking you because they want to be heard. That's the only way they know how to be heard, and that's what they do. It's a very troll-like thing. And like I said, if you're not getting that kind of reaction, you're probably not pushing hard enough anyway. So if I was the chiropractor, I would. I'd go all in. If you're going to paint me as a villain, as a quack and all this stuff, then I'm going to play the part well. In fact, I would play that up. I would start calling myself the quack that actually knows what he's talking about or something. You know, it's called agree and amplify. If someone's going to accuse you of something, agree with it and then take it another step higher. Just go ahead and agree with them, but then, like, make it a cartoon-like thing. It tends to shut people up. It makes the people attacking you look stupid. It's fun. It's entertaining naturally. You just won't care what people think too much after that.
Ben, how important are the use in bullets in your personal sales copy and emails?
I don't use them a lot in emails except when I'm promoting the email player's newsletter like the last day that they can get it that month. Bullets are everything. Ken McCarthy, he has a really good take on this. He's like, the most important skill to learn in copywriting is bullets. Even if you're not writing bullets for your ad, everything is really chunked down into bullets, little sound bites. I mean, a whole ad can be just a bunch of bullets strung together just in a paragraph. And think about how the human mind takes in information. It wants things bulleted. Like when you go to the grocery store, you don't bring a grocery story with you or a grocery paragraph. You bring a grocery list. It's a bullet thing. It's very, very powerful. Paul Hartunian, the publicity guru, I'm a big fan of his, and he's really big on bullets because he uses those in his press releases all the time. He said that's what gets the reporters to call him. He says whenever he's just like writing a note to somebody, like leaving a phone message for someone, he puts everything in bullet form. He's always practicing writing bullets, and I think it's a very good habit to get into.
Okay, excellent. How many emails would you send to the same recipient before recycling them? Do you recycle the same emails?
I do practically all of July's emails recycle. Sometimes you just need a break.
Do you change them up at all?
Maybe a little bit. Maybe I've learned something since the last time I can make it better. But I like to look for ones I can just use verbatim. And I don't do it an awful lot. I just do it when I want to do other things and I want to think about it. Generally speaking, I look a year earlier. That's not a hard and fast rule. It's just what I like to do. Some people might remember. They don't care. They're on your list because they want to hear from you. And most people won't remember anyway. I've had people respond to the same email. I've noted that someone who responded to an email a year ago will respond to that same email as if it was the first time they heard it today. So you can do it. And here's another interesting thing. This goes back to testing emails and why I just think you got to be real careful if you're going to do this. In copywriting, you have the A-B test and all that, okay? So A-B test, you test two sales letters, the winner, that's your control. With email, it's not quite that black and white because I have done so many times that to me this is not even in question anymore. Where I've taken an email that didn't get any sales the first time I used it for whatever reason, but I thought, well, it's still a good email, and you know what, I can just use it verbatim, and I'll reuse it like a year later or 8 or 9 months later, maybe 2 years later, and get a lot of sales. And I've had emails that I've sent out that did really well, and then I reused them again, and they didn't do anything. But I throw that in there because I'm very distrustful of people saying they're testing emails, missing kick butt. Yeah, well, you know what? When you're doing daily emails the way that I teach, at least, maybe if you're only sending one email out a year or whatever, that makes might help you. But a lot of it has to do with where your market's at, where people are financially when they're ready to buy, what they think of you. I mean, there's so many factors at play that you can just keep reusing these things, and maybe you'll get more sales, maybe you'll get less, who knows? The key is just to keep getting something out there every day.
Do you have a method for the time of day you let your emails go out, morning, evening, afternoon?
I used to have them go out 6:30 a.m. Eastern time, because that's just the default time in AWeber, which would be 3:30 my time over here on the coast. And then I got to talking to Andre Chaperon about this. I haven't even taken the time to really test it or not, and I think that would be an ongoing test you'd have to do forever, because it's hard to test these things with email, because email lists are always changing. The variables are always changing. It's not stagnant like a sales letter online. He's like, look, the way I do it, he goes, I want my emails to get to people like around 9:30 in the morning, Eastern time. Because it seems like most of the population in America is on the East Coast, all those cities over there. And he finds that at 9:30, this is not to say everyone should say 9:30. It could be 9, it could be 10 a.m. I just chose it because I want mine to go out early because I like to see the reaction at that time of the day so I don't have to think about it anymore. He's like, they've gotten their morning rush of email at 6 or 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. when they just got into work. Now, their inbox is less crowded later in the morning than earlier in the morning. Now, have I seen any tests on this, and can I prove it? No. I just took his word for it. He's a very smart email guy, and he knows what he's talking about, and I did that. Did I see a rise in sales or anything? I didn't notice it, but to me it made sense. Now, that said, I have no problem sending emails out later, too. In fact, eventually, when I get around to it, one day I'll probably start sending mine out at nighttime just to see what happens, and I'll do that for a year or two. I have done that in the past, where I've sent them out like 8 o'clock at night, and it was fine. Have I ever seen a huge uptick in sales or a drop in sales doing this? Never. Because it's not the time that matters. It's you. It's about you. It's your uniqueness that people are reading and buying from. It's not the time of the day. So that's something to think about, too.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. How are you using yourself on Kindle? Do you have any strategies? What do you have up on Kindle? Have you been able to determine if it generates leads for you, generates sales? What's your strategy there with Kindle?
My friend Greg Perry publishes all my Kindle stuff, and he encouraged me several years ago to do this. He's like, anything you've written, let's just package it and put it on Kindle. It could have been a 12-page ebook, but it's good information. I put all this stuff up there, so I have like a lot of books up there on different subjects. My strategy for that is maybe random people buy it, and then they're going to find me. It's just a way to build an audience. I know my copywriting ebook, which is like $2.99. If I wanted to package this thing, I could easily sell it for $100 or more. And I have that on there, and that tends to bring me a lot of leads, actually. So there's a strategy there. It's not something I think about a lot. It makes me a decent little side income stream. I love having it. It's very consistent. And every time I put new books up there, it goes up a little bit more. I think if people already have content just sitting on their hard drive, you and I have talked about that. Like all those interviews you've done, you're already having them transcribed. Why not just throw them up on Kindle and then don't even think about it? Write a description for them and let them just do their thing. Maybe they make you money, maybe they don't, but they're not making any money not being used. So I would give that advice to anybody.
That's good. Here's a question from Leo Restrich. Is a discounted price more effective than other type offerings?
It can be. The offer is more important than the copy. So you do want to put a lot of thought into that. I think discounts can be good. I think they can be really good. It's not something I do a lot of because I like to have a higher air of quality. Discounting kind of cheapens things sometimes, not all the time. For example, whenever I do an affiliate offer for somebody, I want to have a unique take so they buy it from me and not someone else, and I'll say, hey, can you give my list a little discount? And when people say yes to that, it's great. It definitely helps. People like the word sale. If you want to get a little cash flow surge, have a sale on something. The best way to have a sale is just discount something that you're already selling for a limited time and see what happens.
All right, Barb wants to know, how should I use guarantees when selling my products online? Do you use a guarantee when selling your products? And if not,
well,
why?
It really depends. My stuff at bensettle.com, like my email players newsletter, my copywriting grab bag product, my Cracker Jack Selling Secrets ebook, I don't give any guarantees on that. I really believe it's high-quality stuff that's going to make people a lot of money. It's an education. It's like a university education. If you go to the university and say, I want my money back, they're going to laugh at you, right? You've taken the classes or you bought the classes and didn't attend. It doesn't matter. They're not going to give you your money back. So why should I do that with my stuff when I consider my stuff more valuable than what someone can get at a university? Plus, I like the mentality that it has when people buy and they know there's no guarantee and it's very clear there's no guarantee and it's sink or swim. It's like that story that we've talked about before. I don't know how true it is or not. When Cortez came over to the Americas and he ordered his people to burn all the ships so they'd have to conquer, it's that mindset that I want in my customers. Like I said, I could probably double or triple my sales if I did everything everyone else was doing, but I have a lesser quality type of customer. You know, I'm a big believer, Michael, in having four quarters instead of 100 pennies because I'd rather have a few really high-quality customers than a lot of mixed bad customers. If you have 100 pennies, some of them might be clean and shiny. Some are going to be sticky. You know how many of them were in a stripper's underwear at one time or something. And I know I guess you could say that about quarters, too. I guess that analogy breaks down after a while. But I'm a big believer in that. So for my stuff, I don't know. Other stuff that I sell, like, for example, in the golf market, it's a ridiculous guarantee. They can join our online golf membership club for like $29.99 for an entire year, and they get the first 30 days free no matter what, and then for the next year they can get their money back even if it's like the last day of the year. So that's like a mass market thing. That's different. If you're selling mass market like that, I think you do have a bold guarantee. Or see what happens if you take away your guarantee. You might find that it doesn't affect your sales either way. So it's not like a blanket answer for everyone on that. It's just that's the way I look at various things. I think every product, every niche, every market is unique, and every product is unique. And everything from the guarantee that they offer to the copy to the headline to the branding to the positioning is all going to be unique to this one time in history to these exact people in this exact market. So it's all different. But that's the way I look at it, at least for my stuff. Most of my stuff I do not have a guarantee with. In our market, the internet marketing world, I don't like the kind of people that are attracted to a guarantee. If you don't believe that I'm going to deliver, don't buy from me. Seriously. And I tell people this in my emails, okay, for selling email players. After getting my daily emails, and maybe you've listened to some of my stuff on my site, you might have heard an interview like this. You're still on the fence, okay? Maybe I just said something that you're just not feeling easy about. Do not buy. I don't want you to buy. I want you to buy when you're in, you're ready. You're not only showing up to the job, but you're ready to work. There's something to be said for people who not only show up, but they show up on time, and they show up on time ready to work. That's like 99% of the battle in the job world. And so it is when you're buying high-quality information, whether it be stuff I sell or anyone else sells. You should be ready to go or not buy at all. I don't want people who buy something and then they let it sit on the shelf because it just makes them feel good knowing it's there. For example, people who have eating disorders in some cases, not all eating disorders, but maybe they were starved a little bit as a child and all this, and they have this like hang-up about food. I know someone who has this happen to her. I don't eat all this junk food. I just like to have it because it makes me feel safe, like it's there if I ever need it. And she'll never eat it. It's never going to be eaten, but it's there. And it's actually tied to that dopamine drip thing we were talking about earlier. So I don't really want that mentality buying my products if they're thinking of my products that way. It's not something you just get and then put in a binder and never read it and you'll get to it someday. Don't buy it if you're going to do that. You're wasting your money and you're wasting my time and I don't like it. But when I'm selling mass market and there's a team in place that can handle all the refunds and all that stuff, yeah, I'm all for it.
If I'm interested in starting my own physical newsletter, can you give me a few tips on how to handle the outsourcing for the design and the printing and the mailing? How do you handle that?
Well, I've done two print newsletters. I did the crypto marketing newsletter, which lasted 30 issues. And then the only reason I ended that is because I was selling the email players at the same time for about a year at a time. Trying to serve two masters never works, and email players is far more profitable, so I just let crypto marketing die after 30 issues. And I pretty much said everything I needed to say anyway. It was just generalized marketing information. So I've done two of them, and I've learned a lot of things. I made a lot of mistakes. But one thing I highly recommend is for the printing and fulfillment that you use Richard Selby at selbymarketing.com. And I'm telling you, I've been through several printers since I started selling my own stuff back in 2009. And these guys have been the best. And I'm talking people that I use companies that came well recommended by big name gurus. But I'm like, this is who they recommend. These people are a joke. There were orders not going out and excuses and these weird, ridiculous minimum quantities that don't make any sense. And I went to Selby and I said, hey, all I want is to be able to do this. I have it rigged in my shopping cart so that you guys will get an email every time I get a sale. It'll have the customer's information. I just want it to go out the same day or the next day if it's kind of late in the day. I want it to go out right away, and I want a tracking number. And he goes, Ben, you're not challenging me. The thing is, at the other places I used, it was like hard to get them to do that. You'd be amazed at how incompetent some of these printers are. So I highly recommend Selby.com. And they can do a lot more than that. I mean, they can actually do whole campaigns for you and segment your list, do sequences. But they make it very simple. It's like as easy as if you're selling an ebook because it's all automated. They take care of it. The only time I have to deal with anything is if the post office didn't deliver something. The customer says, hey, I never got this, and I'll just forward that email over to Michelle. She's the girl who I deal with over there at Selby's. She just takes care of it. She's on it, like, white on rice. So I can't recommend them enough. So that's one thing. As far as the design, I use this guy. He calls himself Mr. Subtle, Subtle, S-U-B-T-L-E. He used to be big in the Warrior Forum and Michelle Fortin's copywriting board that is no longer up anymore, but that's how I found out about him. He's a direct response guy by trade. I think he's at marketingbrainfarts.com, at least he used to be. For all marketing-related products, that's who I use. If you're selling something that's not business-related, the best thing you can do is just put it out there, like on social media or in the Elance-type site, and put out there what you're looking for, and you'll get bids, and people will show you their samples. You just pick the one that makes sense to you. It's kind of a subjective thing who's the best. I used that dude when it came to my newsletter design. My first newsletter, the crypto marketing newsletter, I actually had this dude I knew back when I was 19, I used to work with him at a pottery store. He's an artist. He, like, hand-draws his own font. And I thought, man, can you create crypto marketing newsletter masthead for me? He hand-did it. It was really bizarre-looking and cool. It went with the thing. The most important thing is to find someone who matches the personality and the feel that you want. If you want professional, you want to find someone who kind of does slick and professional. If you want something that's a little bit edgy, find an artist who does kind of edgier stuff.
So your newsletter is a template that he helped you design, and you just pull that up every month and try and follow it.
I don't even have it that sophisticated. I don't even have a template other than what I created using Pages. I kind of modeled mine just after how Gary Halbert did his. Mine's a little bit different. It's not like 8 pages of one subject. It's multiple topics. It's in the same thing. But it's basically letter style. It's like written as a letter to somebody. You don't have to do that. There's people who will use 2 columns, like a newsletter would do sometimes. You can do it however you want. I just want mine to look friendly and warm like a letter. Some people don't write that way. Some people write very differently, and they should go with a more professional layout. Like maybe have someone do that. There's no one answer. It's all up to you and the feeling you want people to have when they see it.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Now, when someone goes to your website, BenSettle.com, pretty much you're forced to opt in. Is that right?
No, I use what's called a splash squeeze page. They've been around forever. They kind of fell out of popularity for like a decade. I don't know why. There was a time when people were doing this all the time, like in the late 90s and early 2000s. And then people just went to straight squeeze pages. Or they went to no squeeze page and they wanted to send people to content for like SEO reasons. And, you know, it's all these different reasons. But back in 2012, I think it was, I used to subscribe to Dan Kennedy's No BS Marketing Letter. I don't think he owns it anymore, but there was an article in there by Ryan Dice talking about how they were testing all these different ways of doing squeeze pages, and he talked about the splash squeeze page, where it's a squeeze page, but you still give them the option to click through if they don't want to opt in. And his example was that's what the Obama campaign was doing, and at that time, they were trying to get votes for the 2012 election. They were getting leads. If you go to archive.org, you can look at old websites, and if you go back to the whitehouse.org site using that site, and go back to, I don't know, late 2011, maybe early 2012, you'll see an example of it. It's just like Obama sitting there on his desk and just an opt-in thing, join our list, or you could just no thank you and click through. And that's what his example was, and I did that. I don't remember the exact percentage, but my opt-ins definitely went up immediately after that, so I was a believer after that one.
Yeah, this looks good. I don't remember seeing it like this. When did you change it to this format or this design?
Well, I had a splash squeeze page since 2012, but I recently hired the only designer that I've ever dealt with on the internet who's not a complete flake. His name is Keith Commons, and he's out of Ireland, and the guy's direct response trained. He's just the best guy you can work with as a designer, in my opinion. He's very pricey, but he's worth it. And I had him go through this, and he created what you're seeing there now on the site. And we're split testing 2, actually, right now. I'm not sure which one you're seeing. There's one where I'm kind of sitting against the wall, and there's another kind of staring at you. And the one that I'm sitting against the wall is winning. It's pretty much the winner. But those are going to be dismantled very soon because Jim Yagi's taking over my AdWords stuff, and he's going to test landing pages that he knows work really well for AdWords. So it's going to be changing very soon, and that's fine. You always want to keep things in motion. You always want to be using the best thing. So we'll see what happens with that. But I think it's definitely worth it to hire someone who's a professional, who understands direct response design, who understands from our point of view. He's not an artist. He's not an artsy-fartsy guy. He's looking at it from a sales point of view and a response point of view. Very few people out there like that. But if anyone wants to hire him, I have the guy in retainer every month. So I pay him every money just so I can just email him if I want something done. And he's just well worth it.
It looks good. It's very clean design.
Yeah, I also had him redo the emailplayers.com sales letter. I said, okay, I want to try something different. I have found that when I split test sales letters for my own stuff to my leads, it makes almost no difference because the emails are doing all the selling. But I wanted to have something that looked a little bit better. The way I had it before was still kind of cool looking, but it wasn't really mobile friendly. It was old. It was the old HTML that I created back in 2007 or something, maybe even earlier than that. Actually, I think I created it back in like 2005 or 6, and it was just out of date. So he updated all that, made it mobile-friendly, which your sites have to be if you want them indexed in Google, from what I understand now. So it's worth it to hire a designer. It doesn't have to be him, but any designer that you can trust who knows what they're doing, it's worth the money.
How often do people contact you and want to hire you to write email copy or sales letters for them? And are you currently taking clients?
I haven't done clients in exactly 4 years. When I launched Email Players, I was thinking I'd be lucky to get 20 subscribers when I launched because it was a high-ticket thing. And my list was only like 5,000 people at the time. And I ended up getting like 82 people on the launch. I'm like, that's it. I do not need to do client work anymore. So I haven't done client work since July of 2011. So I don't want to do client work. God willing, I'll never have to do client work again. I don't like it. That said, I have on my website this thing at the top that says FAQs for the uninitiated, you know, people who don't know me. And I spend time in there saying that I don't take on clients. And if I did, here's what I would charge. I put that in there, and people who don't read that will sometimes ask me, hey, are you taking clients on? And I don't. What I do is I pass client jobs that come across my desk. As long as it's someone who's legitimate, no one's going to work on spec or anything, the people I'm going to pass it to. If they're legitimate, worthy clients, I will tell my email players, subscribers about it, because there's some freelancers who subscribe. I think you're in good hands, but I always tell everyone, it's a private thing between the two people. Don't bring me into it. If something goes wrong, it's between you guys. I'm just letting you guys know each other exists. I will do that for people every now and then. I may even start charging for that. If it starts becoming this thing where I'm getting lots of people wanting me to tell my paying customers about their client project, if it gets to the point where I start getting like 10 of these a week or something, which is starting to get to that point almost, I may start charging would-be clients to advertise them because it's valuable. These are the people I'm training month after month. They're paying me $100 a month to learn this stuff. They're serious. But generally, I don't take clients.
All right, about the website. Are you using WordPress for the back end?
Yeah, it's all WordPress-based. Not the email players sales, right? I mean, that's just by itself. But my blog is definitely WordPress-based. And that's why I use Keith Commons, because he understands WordPress. I know nothing about technical stuff. I spent so many hours in the early years trying to figure out how to put up HTML. I wasted so much time. I was so broke back then, I couldn't have outsourced anything if I wanted to. They didn't have 5RR back then. But I'm a big believer in outsourcing all this stuff if you're not good at it or don't like doing it. Just be nice to yourself and outsource it.
You want to share with the listeners the story about you being part owner with the golf company? How'd that come about? What is it? What do you guys sell?
Yeah, like I said, the guy who helps me selling the prostate niche, I've known him for a few years. And he's got this friend named Marty McDonald. We've run in the same circles for years. I just never met the guy until spring of 2014. They came to me and said, look, we're putting this golf deal together. Eric's going to do all the traffic stuff. My friend Marty's the other guy, Marty McDonald. He's like the rainmaker. He's the one doing all the deals, calling, making all these deals and stuff and getting things set up. It's his vision. It's his conception. It's his baby, really, and he calls it Golfing Fanatics. They use social media to get their clients' sales, not just like likes and all that. So he's a real direct response, smart, savvy guy. And he had this idea for an online private golf club. So if someone listening to this plays golf, they know what I'm talking about. There's private country clubs out there, private golf clubs, that can cost as much as $100 a month to as much as $50,000 a year. Sometimes they're even more expensive than that. It's like $100,000 a year to belong to one of these. And some of the perks that you get when you join these clubs is you get free stuff. Major golf manufacturers don't really know how to market themselves. We're talking about apparel manufacturers and golf clubs and gadgets and equipment. They're not really good at marketing themselves. In fact, a lot of them are very much struggling. So they rely on these private golf clubs to do demos there. Like they'll send people there with a bunch of clubs and they'll give people a bunch of free stuff just so they'll use it and review it and let their friends see that they're using it. For example, let's say you got a new golf driver, and, wow, you know, you're hitting better. You best believe that the people you play with who are hardcore golfers are going to want to buy that same thing. We're all looking for that edge. So that's kind of what they rely on. They actually give free stuff away to these types of clubs so that people review and use this stuff. And if it's clothing, they'll go wear it, and then all their friends will want to buy it. I mean, that's like they're just not very sophisticated marketers. I don't understand it either because it's like the most rabid market out there. You'd think that all the best marketers would be in this, but they're not. Anyway, so his idea was, what if we created an online golf club that was private that we charge like $30 a year instead of like $50,000 a year, but they get most of these same benefits? So he's made all these relationships with brand name manufacturers at that, and they're agreeing to send us stuff that we can send to our members so they can review it and use it, and they get to keep everything. It's not like you have to send anything back. He's just a very unique guy. He's got connections in the PGA where he lives in Pennsylvania, and now he's going nationwide. And we've got some really high-level golf coaches, like people who teach in PGA Magazine and the Golf Channel. Got people like that involved with us to do the training side. So we have this membership site where you sign up, you're eligible to get free stuff wherever we can get it to you, and that's what's taken us so long to launch this thing. We want to have everything in place so that we have stuff to give people. And you fill out your measurements, and you fill out what you want and the stuff you're looking for, and if we can get it, we'll give it to you. And there's no guarantees, but you're eligible for all this stuff just by being a member for, what, $30 a year. at the moment it's that. We'll probably start charging a monthly thing of like $20 a month or something eventually. But as of now, summer of 2015, that's our price. So we're doing that. There's also high-level training inside from PGA pros and PGA master professionals. There's a PGA master professional is basically kind of like the graduate PhD version of a golf instructor. It's just a very rigorous thing they have to go through to prove their philosophy. And we have some other experts in there. A lot of people don't realize this, but golfers get what I'm saying here, is that it can be kind of a lonely game to play. This actually happens where a guy will go out and they'll hit a hole-in-one, which is like the coolest thing you can do in golf, is they hit a hole-in-one. And they'll go home and they'll tell their wife, and say, eh, that's nice, but she doesn't get it. She's just not a golfer. It's not like she doesn't care, but she can't get excited by it. He wants to go tell somebody, but he can't because none of his friends are playing golf either. So there's like a camaraderie there in these types of golf clubs too. So we've got that built into it. It's like a real club experience, but it's all online, and people can get discounts on travel. That's kind of in the works. We're putting things like upload a video of your golf swing, put that in the forum. Everybody can critique it. We can all help each other out. But the main thing is you're eligible to get free stuff, which is really cool, I think. And that's how that came apart. And they came to me and they said, look, can you do all the copywriting in the email? I said, hell yeah, I'm in. So it's like the three of us co-own it together. We have the majority position in it. We got some other people who were giving a little bit of a company to just to keep them in. But it's our thing. And we've already soft launched it once in the springtime. And we're going to do a second soft launch very soon. And even on our soft launch, we're getting like $5 buyers to ice cold traffic, which Eric tells me is like really good. So the offer I wrote is converting like crazy. Everything's in place. It's just we want to make sure we have everything to give people before we really roll this thing out. I think it's going to be big.
And it's going to be rolled out through paid advertising?
Not just paid advertising like the normal stuff, like pay-per-view ads and pay-per-click ads and Facebook ads, but also Groupon and Living Social type sites. It's perfect for those types of things. So once we get this thing rolled out, I don't want to say it's a sure thing because there's never a sure thing, but the three of us are extremely excited by it. It's something we can all dig into and build something big. And that's perfect because I don't have to do all the administrative stuff. I can just do what I do and then probably hand it off to some other copywriter later. That's kind of the ultimate goal, is to build this thing up and then let other people run it and go start something else.
Sounds good. It's a great market, too. And looking at some of the testimonials on your bensettle.com website, and I got a question from Pat Murray from New South Wales, Australia. Russell Brunson, is he the real deal? And he goes, Michael, I know Ben did a mastermind with him at some stages and has talked him up quite a bit. He's one of your subscribers, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I have nothing but respect for Russell Brunson. I've been a big fan of his for many years. He paid to attend in Oceans 4 once. And he said a couple of things to me that I found was kind of interesting, kind of inflated my ego a little bit. First, he goes, Ben, you're kind of the only reason I came to this. I just really wanted to meet you. I've been on your list, and I'm just amazed at how you mail daily and are able to consistently do that. I guess he's been a fan of mine for a little while, too, which is kind of interesting. But we were having dinner one of those nights, and we were talking, and he's like, you know, Ben, I used to just really hate you. He goes, I don't know why. I just didn't like you. I just couldn't stand you. You know this guy. He's not that kind of guy. Like, he does not come off as, like, a hater in any way. Like, he's, like, the classiest guy you'll meet. So I was a little taken back by that. But he goes, now I have to read your stuff. Now I like it. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But he has this book. If you go to .comsecretslab.com, I think is the URL. And that's spelled out, dotcomlabs.com, where you can get a copy of this book he wrote called, I think it's like 108 Split Tests. I don't know if that's the exact title, but it's a fascinating book. It's all these split tests he's done. And with email, you confirmed a lot of stuff that I've often suspected. I've been too lazy to try to test myself. All you pay for is shipping, so he's obviously getting you on a list. And he sells to the internet marketing crowd, so he's got to use the stuff that works on them. In my opinion, just from my observation, not speaking for him by any means, but it looks like he's going after the mainstream internet marketing crowd, the dopamine drip people. So he's got to market to them in a way that they'll buy. I think that's why sometimes people ask about this. But if you talk to this guy, if you read any of his stuff, if you listen to his podcast, you can just tell he eats, breathes, and craps marketing. I mean, this dude is like an encyclopedia of marketing now. It's just like talking to this guy is just a fascinating experience. And I just can't recommend him enough. I like the dude. I like what he teaches. I like what he does. Just yesterday, in fact, I didn't even know he had a print newsletter until yesterday. And so I subscribed to it like right away. I can't wait to get my first issue. He just really knows his stuff. Is he perfect? No. Are any of us? No. I mean, we all have things that are probably going to repulse you. But I think he's the real deal.
Can you recommend some good direct mail podcasts that you listen to and learn a lot from?
About direct mail?
Direct mail, email, marketing, any podcast that you're getting into that you find a lot of value in.
Here's the irony. I'm a podcaster, but I really don't listen to other podcasts. I'm a novelist, and I don't read other novels. I'm an email marketer. I don't really read a lot of emails. I don't really know a lot of them. But I can tell you this. Jonathan Rivera, who produces my podcast, he produces other people's podcasts. He's building like a little syndicate, like a network of his people. And I know Doberman Dan's podcast is on there. You can trust him. His stuff is really good. And if you go to thepodcastfactory.com, that's Jonathan's site, you can see all his podcasts. And I would say he's not going to associate himself with bad people or anything. So I would think you could trust those podcasts. You know, I haven't heard them, but I know Jonathan's not going to put his reputation on the line with garbage. So thepodcastfactory.com is a good place to start. I've heard a couple of Russell Brunson's podcasts, just a couple episodes. I think he does them while he's in the car. He records himself while he's in the car driving somewhere, which is an interesting way of doing it. And I listened to a couple of them. They're really good. They're short. They're like 8 minutes long. I would recommend his. And if you're in network marketing, my friend Ray Higdon has a daily podcast, like 3 or 4 minutes long each. So that's a good one. I think he's like 100,000 downloads a month or something. So he's obviously resonating. But you could start with those.
All right, great. Have you heard anything about the Halbert brothers? Do you know if Kevin and Bond are doing anything worthwhile when it comes to marketing?
I don't know. I don't really read their stuff. I'm on their list, but it's like something they send out once in a while, and I usually just don't get to it. That said, from what I understand, I mean, this is all hearsay. I don't really know the guys. They probably do have some things planned. I would guess they would. I would hope so. They have a tremendous legacy to share with everyone. I remember on Facebook once, I mean, this is just kind of a side note, I remember Russell Brunson said something to Bond Halbert on his wall, because you can see when your friends post other people's stuff sometimes, and he's like, can I just buy everything that your dad did? I want to buy everything. Do you guys offer that? I hope one day they do that. Maybe there's some reason they can't, but I would love it if they would make all this stuff available for sale. I know a lot of us would be buying that left and right. I'd be on that like white on rice.
All right, one other question, and you referred me over to Andrew when I was having problems with people counterfeiting the HMA system. And what advice would you give for someone with online marketing when it comes to digital products and what to look for with all the counterfeiters out there?
Yeah, that's Alistair Evans, I think his name is. Gosh, his URL escapes me. I don't suppose you remember what it is.
Not off the top of my head.
But if you look up Alistair Evans, I'm sure it will come up. And they do a really good service. People who are sharing your stuff illegally, the pirates, they will file all these things with Google and get them removed from Google so nobody can find them. And they give you a report every month so you get to see exactly what they're doing. I love their service. I told the guy, I'm like, man, you're really doing a service. You know, there's a lot of people that don't worry about this stuff. They have a good point. People who say, well, you know, you shouldn't be wasting your time. You know, just sell and don't worry about it. And I get it. They have a good point there. Obsessing over this is not going to do you any good. At the same time, to me, it's kind of an ego thing, and it's kind of the principle of the matter. If you go and sell into your market, you actually care about your market, which I do. Like, I don't think you should sell in a market if you don't really care and empathize with the people there. Your market a disservice if you're allowing your stuff to be downloaded for free, because they're never going to apply it. They're never going to do anything with it. They're not going to respect it, and it doesn't help anybody. So, if anything, it's going to hurt people, in my way of looking at it. So, to me, it goes beyond just like, oh, money and this and that. It probably doesn't even hurt people's sales. People are going to pirate your stuff, probably weren't going to buy from you anyway. But it's the principle of the matter. Why share the stuff that you're busting your ass to learn and experience? Why let people just walk into your house and steal it? It doesn't make any sense. You do what you can, but Alistair Evans, he definitely has a good service for that. Yeah, I've referred you and several people to him, and you get that printout, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's done an incredible job.
I think it's called TakedownZar.com. It's good stuff. I highly recommend it.
All right, one last time for this interview. If anyone is just now checking in, can you give out your URL for your website and tell them what to do once they get there?
Yeah, it's bensettle.com. And when you get there, if you're so inclined, you can opt in or not. You don't have to opt in. But if you do opt in, I will send you the first issue of my email players newsletter. It's a very real, legitimate $97 retail value. That's what each issue costs. Now, it's a PDF. It's not a print version. Like, people actually subscribe to it. They get a print version for their money. But you get this free, the first issue, just for opting in. If you don't opt in, that's fine. There's like 1,000-plus some pages of content on the site, a ton of audio and video training. It's all free. I get testimonials from people who've just applied the free stuff. says they've doubled their sales. Now, a lot of them have gone on to subscribe, but I was telling you earlier in the interview about the lady who emailed me once, and she's like, look, I've just got your free stuff so far. I didn't have a chance to subscribe or anything, and it put like $50,000 of extra profit in my boss's last sale we did just using your stuff that they never would have got otherwise, and they're like really excited now. So this stuff works. I'm not saying you're going to make that much necessarily. I mean, that was probably a big list, but people are making money just with that free issue. So go ahead and use it.
Perfect. Ben, that wraps it up, man. This has been a kick-ass interview. I think we've covered a lot of topics here. So I really appreciate you doing this.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a long time, man, since we've done one of these.
I know. Well, it's been a long time coming, so yeah, I'm sure you'll get some value out of it.
Remember the first time you interviewed me? I was so nervous.
Yeah. Dude, you've come a long way. But you've earned it. You are a shy little kitten.
I'm like a cranky old tomcat now, but
you're a tiger. You've busted your ass. You've earned it. You've worked incredibly hard, so you deserve all the success that you have.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, man.
Hopefully more to come.
I'm sure. That's the end of our three-part interview series with Ben Settle. I hope you found it helpful. And for more exclusive interviews on copywriting, business, and marketing, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.